News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of June, Anno Domini 2004, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And we'll be bringing you all the cool stuff that we normally do in Soundbites. We're a tad short-handed today. I don't know where Dave is, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the...
It's a nice day, and I'm hoping he's got his bike out of storage by now.
Yeah, right. either that or he's slamming things around, upset that he hasn't got his bike out of storage yet. That's maybe part of the problem. But we'll start today with the news, and we'll start, let's see. How about you, Steve?
Okay, maybe I will. We had some excitement in the Mac world this week and a little bit of disappointment. Apple surprised us all with new revisions of the G5 Power Mac Professional Power. Now all the models are dual processing, starting at 1.8 gigahertz for $19.99. The middle model is a dual 2.0 gigahertz, and the top of the line is a dual 2.5. They've also upgraded the SuperDrive to an 8X DVD writer. The 2.5 gigahertz is the first mainstream machine from a mainstream company to ship with a liquid cooling system. So no more spinny fans on the heatsink and processor. They actually have a cooling system that has a thermally conductive fluid. Really interesting and fairly dry reading going through the spec sheets to move the heat away from the processors. The disappointing news was that everyone was hoping for a 3 gigahertz model. When Steve Jobs introduced the G5 last year, was commenting on IBM's fabrication process and basically said that we should be able to get to 3 gigahertz within a year. Well, it's been a year since the first announcement, but the G5s didn't start shipping until September, so we have a few more months until the actual one-year anniversary date of the shipping of the model. So there's still a few months left to get out, and whether that was an actual promise or just hopeful speculation, we're not really sure either. But it's really neat now, moving up the product line in the G5. 25% processor speed improvement, and a lot of the industry analysts are saying that's very amazing for IBM, considering that the Intel got from a 3.0 to like a 3.05 this year. So they're not really expanding their clock speed much. And most of the other companies, Intel and AMD included, are still starting to now talk more about what Apple's been saying for years as the megahertz myth. The actual clock speed of the computer doesn't really matter. It's how fast can you get your work done. And the IBM PowerPC family is more efficient than the Intel architecture, so it can do more at a slower speed. So it's interesting to see how the marketplace is still fighting and still trying to one up each other. And if Intel can't get their clock speeds up any higher, the Mac's going to catch up in numbers as they've already surpassed them in actual performance. The other interesting product that came out this week was the Airport Express, and this is a little tiny wireless hub. Basically looks like the PowerBook AC adapters, if you're feeling a little tiny white brick. And it's actually four neat little products in one. It's a wireless hub to plug into your network so you can get wireless access. It's a USB print server, like the existing wireless hubs from Apple, so you can share your printer and then print wirelessly. It also can, the newest feature that it has is Airstream, that it can stream your iTunes music. So you can plug the Airport Express into your stereo system, either with a standard audio patch cable or using a digital audio interface, and then from your computer, anywhere on the network, wired or wirelessly, be able to send your iTunes music library into the stereo. So it's a neat combination of home computing and now personal audio as well. So it, that should start shipping in a couple of weeks. And again, the G5s, the 1.8 and the 2.0s are available now, and the 2.5s will be available in mid-July. So cool. Some excitement in the Mac world with new products.
Ooh, I'm very excited. Thank you. Wow. Wow. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. Back in just a couple of moments with Steve Ray, Hannah Jacobs, Mina Francesco, all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
You can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And this is Soundbites. More news. Let's see what's a lot of news today. There's a brand new hole in Internet Explorer. Man, I should have told people to sit down first. Brand new hole in Internet Explorer. Two of them, in fact. They allow a complete bypass of all security and provide system access to a computer, including the installation of files on somebody's hard disk without their knowledge, through a single click. Worse, these holes were discovered because there are already websites exploiting them. That's right. The problem is already out there in the world. And even fully patched versions of Internet Explorer are vulnerable. This has been rated extremely critical, and the only advice is to disable active scripting support for all but trusted websites.
This, and then be careful about who you trust.
Well, exactly. And the script that's being used to run that exploit is one that Microsoft Corporation has been aware of since August 2003, but has not yet patched. This code is already available on the net and certainly could constitute a security nightmare, except for those of us running Mozilla or Opera. I just had to say that. A new study shows that Russia and China are behind the current spam deluge that's hitting us. As more and more spam hits the Internet, experts believe that pretty soon 9 out of 10 of all emails will be unsolicited junk. Organized criminals.
We're all having trouble today.
Organized criminals based in Russia are fueling the rise in the amount of spam sent over the Internet. The Spam House Project says these gangs are supplying U.S.-based spammers with details of compromised PCs that those spammers can then use to send out their spam and the Russians are creating more viruses to create more of those open proxies. Obviously, the Russians aren't constrained by any anti-spammer cyber laws. They certainly have no respect for our legislation.
And they're strapped for cash.
And that's exactly right. And those people who are doing the spamming in the United States are using hosts in China. And, of course, the Chinese don't have any respect for our laws and certainly are not bound by them. But the United States and Russia and China are not the only ones in the spam news. Germany was hit by a huge wave of hate mail. Messages had taglines like, "What Germany needs are German children," complaining about the increasing number of immigrants who are driving criminality up and entering into, quote, mixed relationships, unquote, with German women. And foreigners who increasingly travel to Germany as medical tourists to take advantage of the health care costs in Germany. It's a terrible thing. There, more than 80% of the spam it receives is coming from a server at the University of Rostock. And they're working to trace the spam back to its original source. But it's a lot of hate spam. And as you know, the Germans have a thing against hate speech, and so it's an interesting problem they're running against. Cybercrime is, of course, emerging as the leading information technology threat, according to Amit Yoren, the head of the Homeland Security, Department of Cybersecurity Directorate. Crime now ranks above the threat of cyber terrorism.
Wow.
I think that's pretty interesting. Microsoft is in another patent fight. That's not even interesting anymore. Two more vulnerabilities in Microsoft. Direct Play and Crystal Reports have problems, so make sure you update. And on the home front, New York State suit against Microsoft can continue. There's a class action suit from New York State alleging deceptive and monopolistic business practices. The state Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that the lawsuit could continue, overruling part of a lower court's decision that had sided with Microsoft. Microsoft seems to feel this is a bad ruling. How about that? And, of course, Microsoft paid $250,000 for information leading to the guy who wrote and released the Sasser worm. And it took place. So it's security by checkbook over at Microsoft. We can't keep people out, but doggone it, we can pay you to turn them in when they get here.
Or write your own virus, turn yourself in, and make the cash.
I don't know that wouldn't be possible. Pretty interesting idea. But we're going to do. Are we going to the phones now, Hannah? Would that make you happy? If it makes you happy, it makes us happy. We're going to the phones now just to make Hannah happy. And our first caller is John from Webster. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Yeah, we're great. How are you?
And gals. I have a question about Netscape. Recently, several months ago, I upgraded to Netscape 7. And with the new Netscape, I cannot seem to download things like PDF files. In my old Netscape and with Internet Explorer that I'm running, when I attempt to download a PDF file, it will open a Real Download Express window and go right ahead and do the job. But the new Netscape just hangs up whenever I try to do that. Any ideas what's going on? I went through all of the Netscape settings, and I couldn't find anything.
There is a workaround. Let's give you that first. If you right-click on the link, instead of left-clicking on it, instead of regular-clicking on it, right-click on it, you'll get a drop-down menu. One of the choices from there is to save the file.
Okay.
Or download the link. Depends on what version of Netscape you're running as to what the actual thing is, but it's one of those, and it'll say basically if you right click on it, you'll get a message, something along. You get a bunch of things, and one of them is save link to disk.
Okay.
And then you click on that, and then it'll let you save the file that's being linked to your hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a get around. Now, as to why this is happening, what it sounds like is that when you set up Netscape, I can't, of course, I don't know where it's hanging, but I'll bet you it's trying to load some Adobe Reader product
it
and
may
actually
not,
open the PDF.
It may not have brought in the plug-in right from the old Netscape.
Right.
That's what I thought, but I couldn't find anything on the Netscape site that addressed that issue. And, of course, their tech support is
It would probably be on the Adobe site, unloading plugins into browsers.
The easiest
thing to do would be to uninstall and reinstall the Acrobat Reader, and then that installer should find all your current browsers and load the plugin.
Okay, I have Adobe 6, which I upgraded to probably before the Netscape.
Yeah, try the newest version of Adobe and download it and install it, and I'll bet you that solves your problem right there.
Okay, there's no other download manager or program that needs to be plugged into
Netscape
that.
Netscape has its own download manager. Most of the other ones are some form of adware or spyware, so I don't recommend them.
Yeah, if you can find the helper list, you might be able to manually redirect PDF to the Acrobat Reader. The easiest thing is to reinstall Acrobat.
Right. And, by the way, if you want to know what plugins you have, and I don't know that this works in Netscape. I know it works in Mozilla, which is based on the same code. If you know where you type web addresses up at the top there in that little box?
Yeah.
Type about, colon, plugins.
Okay.
And you'll see a list of all your plugins. I don't know that that works in Netscape, but I know it works in Firefox, which is the same basic code, so it should work.
Okay.
About, colon, plugins.
Okay, I'll give those things a try.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
We're going to take another quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Hannah Jacobs, me, Nick Francesco, you, your phone calls, all kinds of other cool stuff on Soundbite. Don't go anywhere. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
They would rather do their show in a chat room. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And this is Soundbites. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Jim.
Good morning.
From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good morning. I've got a Internet Explorer, and I'm just about to get rid of it and replace all this with Foxfire. But before I do that, the problem I'm getting is I've got lots of pop-ups. Now, I've installed the pop-up banners for Explorer. I've done the Security Tango. I've actually taken every piece of advice I can get and downloaded two or three other programs. And the pop-ups I'm getting are not coming in. They're the ones that are going out. So if I disconnect the Internet, I will still get the pop-ups, but I'll get the can't connect message in the pop-up window. And I can't find any way to get rid of them, and it just completely trashed my ability to do work. Any suggestions where they're coming from, how to find them, get rid of them?
Stop using Internet Explorer is pretty much
that's the basic one. Part of it. It's clear that you still have some form of spyware on your system.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sort of extra toolbar that you downloaded and installed into Explorer? Like the Google toolbar?
No, not the Google, but I do have the Yahoo toolbar.
There you go. That answers your question
Okay, so get rid of it and replace it with Foxfire. The tools for converting the mail client over to is it Mozilla?
Yeah. There's two ways to go.
Yeah.
There's the Mozilla suite, which is everything. It's the web browser, the email, the whole nine yards. There's Firefox, and everything I'm talking about is from the Mozilla people.
Okay.
There's Firefox, which is just the web browser, and there's Thunderbird, which is just the mail client.
Okay.
So they're all available right from Mozilla.org, and you can either pick up the whole Mozilla suite or the other two products individually.
Which are actually still in beta test, but they're pretty stable betas.
Well, I've been using both for a long time.
I'm ready to convert. Well, last week I had 200 emails, of which two of them were good and the rest are all bad. So. Yeah.
Well, one nice thing about Thunderbird is they have an awfully decent junk mail thing. What you do is, starting now, don't throw away your junk mail. Put it in a folder.
Yep.
Then when you've got 200, 300, 400 of them, that actually takes you, what, a couple hours?
Yeah.
You take those, and when you are actually running Thunderbird, you point it to all of them and say, these are all junk.
Oh, good idea.
And that trains it. Then you save a bunch of your regular mail, point it to that and say, this is good mail, and that trains it.
I had a mail folder in my inbox became corrupted. And I tried to rebuild it using the tools, and I rebuilt it, but now I can't access the attachments, and I can't do anything with the emails themselves. I can read them, but I can't send them or modify them. When I change to the Mozilla suite, would that maybe solve that problem as well, or am I toast?
I don't know that it'll fix it. You can certainly migrate some mail clients over to Thunderbird, but I don't honestly know that that's going to fix that problem.
If it can read the mail and import it, then it will probably fix it, but more likely it won't be able to read them at all because the database is corrupted.
Right.
That toolbar that I added, if I remove that toolbar, will that get rid of my pop-up problem, or is that just now part of the program?
It'll minimize it. Minimize the problem. Finding where all of them are coming from is pretty much hopeless.
Okay. Time for a change.
Right, and that's because Internet Explorer allows that to happen.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okie doke.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. You have a good weekend as well. It's particularly when the person is long distance, it's hard to know, but I think you're probably right. It's if the stuff is corrupted.
Although that is one of the tips for trying to recover corrupted mail is import it into another program. It may be able to read up to that broken point and then stop.
Right, and you would still be able to respond and do all that other stuff. You just can't get you may not get the attachments back. They'll still be somewhere on your hard drive.
Yeah,
they just won't be linked to the specific email anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Our next caller, Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. Actually, I have two questions. I'm running XP, AOL Broadband. I've SpyBot on here and the McAfee personal firewall. And with the firewall, two questions I have is I'm getting about 6,000 or so events shown in a week. I don't know if that's normal or not. And the most disconcerting thing is that what's been being – it shows all the source IPs that are being blocked. And one of them that's been reoccurring has been my own source IP address. The host name is my computer name, and it has an extension on here that is from AOL.com, and I'm wondering if that's a problem.
Okay, here's what's happened.
Can you still get to internet and mail sites?
I do have some trouble connecting at times on the internet.
Well, 6,000 events a week, you might. Here's the deal. It's not actually terribly unusual to get 6,000 events a week, particularly on AOL. AOL has had a couple of problems here and there in terms of security, and it's fairly easy to guess what any individual's AOL address combination is going to be. What's clearly happened is that, and we know this to be true, there are a bunch of places that have that can spoof an IP address, pretend to be from a place that they're not. And oftentimes they pretend to be from AOL because a lot of AOL users are not technically savvy about this stuff and never learn that their address is being used illegally. In your particular case, the idiots are sending stuff to you and pretending to come from you. Duh. But
which is actually getting very, very common.
Yeah, but it's unlikely, with all that stuff you've got running, it's unlikely that it's actually coming from you. What antivirus program are you running?
The one that comes with, it's also McAfee, the one that comes with AOL.
And that's all up to date and all that stuff?
Yes.
One of the things that may be, which is why I asked if you're having trouble connecting, is that if your computer is trying to get out to the internet for a legitimate purpose, open a web page, open an email, open this, open that, it's possible to inadvertently have the firewall block your computer from getting where you want to go. And that might be where some of those addresses that your address is coming from.
Right.
That was a big problem when the firewalls first started coming out. When you log into your mail server, you send a packet out, and your mail server starts sending packets back to see who this is and are you really supposed to get this mail. And a lot of people would get this firewall message saying this address is trying to contact your computer. And you're saying, I don't know what that is. You know, block it, and then their mail stops working.
Because it's them.
Right.
That's why firewalls like Zone Alarm are nice, because they have separate in and out blocking lists.
Yeah.
So I can block, if something tries to come in from my address, I can block it, but my address can still go out.
Right. So, and it's always a catch-22. If you do get infected by something, your computer can be opening connections you don't want.
Right.
But when you're surfing the web, you're opening connections you do want.
Right. To make sure that you're clean, definitely for your own peace of mind, run the Security Tango. But particularly on AOL, 6,000 events a week is not that incredibly unusual.
1,000 a day, 100 an hour.
Right. It's not that unusual, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Sorry. I know that's not what he wanted to hear, but I apologize. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Hannah Jacobs, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Got a computer question? Call the boys at 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
What were you waiting for, Dave Enright? That's what you're waiting for. I know it's hard, isn't it?
It's that rhythm you get into.
You do. You get into the rhythm.
I know I have like 4 seconds after you say your name.
Well, we're now going to go to 1, 2, 3, 4. Bruce from Henrietta. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi, guys. My question is about kernel panic.
Yeah.
I installed... let's see, what was it, Panther Jaguar? The latest 10.3 on a blue and white G3 had no problems with the install, and this is a dual boot system or multi-boot system, and then I did something I shouldn't have done, and I couldn't get back.
What did you do?
In System 9, I cleaned up the desktop, and
Oops.
10.3 doesn't like you moving certain files, apparently.
Right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, it's System 10 makes them invisible, but System 9 will see them.
Yes. Yes. Well, I figured out that eventually and made things right. My question is, I couldn't get back into 10 with the install CD. I had to get a bootable 9 CD. So I was wondering, these latest and greatest utility products, like Tech Tool Pro and things like that, would they also have a problem if it was something similar happened, or should I?
Well, they need to have a startup disk application to let you choose which system you want to start from.
Mm-hmm.
If you have multiple partitions or multiple hard drives, you can use the boot manager. Holding down the option key will bring a list of all your volumes and let you choose which one to boot from.
Yeah, well, right now so, I have only one hard drive.
Right, as one partition, one. That doesn't help.
No.
I'm pretty sure Disk Warrior 3 has a startup disk. Norton or SystemWorks 3 might have a startup disk on it. I'm trying to remember offhand. But, yeah, you need to have a disk with the startup disk application, either an OS 9 CD or an external hard drive.
Right. Well, that's why I was learning about these newer utilities, whether they would have the same problem that the install CD had, where it would just, it couldn't boot off of the install for whatever reason.
Right. It doesn't change what your startup disk is. It just tries to restart from it.
Yep.
Yeah, some of them do, some of them don't. It's kind of hit and miss as to which ones do.
Okay. Well, thanks for the help, guys, and have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks. Disk Warrior?
That's a drive repair utility.
No, I got that part. It's just, you know, one thing about the PC world, we may be dull and boring, but we name things what they are. It's like partition. We may go to the partition magic part. We don't name something where you look at it and think, is this a hard drive utility or a Frisbee game?
Frisbee is a registered trademark of Wham-O Incorporated and used here only with love and devotion.
Plastic flying disc.
Right. A plastic flying disc game. I'm sure it's a wonderful utility. It's just you have no idea what the name of the thing is or what you're doing with it. We're going to take a quick break back in after the... Oh, we have a whole minute. I can just keep on talking and talking and talking.
Well, we should say for Chet, who left us with a Hitchhiker's Guide reference.
Yes.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie started filming. And on the BBC webpage, they have a video of scene one, take one, shot one.
Ooh, got to take a look. Zaphod Beeblebrox. What a great name. We are, however, going to take a break, and we will be back post-news with a whole lot more sound bites on the great and incredible 1180 WHAM. So don't go anywhere. Don't do anything. Just sit there, glued to your seat. We'll be back after the news. Welcome back. I'm sorry, we just grooving to the music. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Hannah Jacob.
And this is Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, and I know that you're all hanging on there breathlessly waiting for us to get to the call, I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website, and we'll start with the poll. Every week we have a poll in which we ask you earth-shattering, if not brain-dead, questions. This week, we wanted to know, although we are delighted, thrilled, and excited to have the magnificent Hannah Jacobs as our producer today, normally we have Robert F. Linton III. Master Robert F. Linton III, or as we think of him, Rob Linton, as our producer. And it just recently came to us that his middle initial is F. But he refuses to tell us what the F stands for. Although today he did tell me it has been guessed. Now, people have guessed. One guy, somebody put up a whole list of every, like the canonical list of F names, so to speak. And so I don't know that that's going to do us any good. But it was our poll last week. What is Robert F. Linton III's real name? 241 of you voted, making it number 103. You know, if I were, I have a horrible allergy condition right now. And if I were actually on something for it, I could excuse my behavior and the way I'm talking, but I can't. 103 on the all-time hit list. I want to thank each and every one of you. 241 of you voted. The number one choice was Farley, which he seems to think is not, Rob seems to think is not correct. We know better. Followed by some other F word. Followed by Frodo, which was my personal choice. Followed by Filbert, Fabian, Farfel, and of course, the not so very popular Fantasia. This week's poll, well, and by the way, I have to say, normally, you want to talk about brain dead, the opinions, half of them are wonderful. Half of them are brain dead every week. But the opinions on Rob's middle name were absolutely phenomenal. And in addition, there were 94 of them. 94 of them. That's a ridiculously great number. It is. But somebody did. Maybe it was Fungus Face was the correct guess. It's an odd sort of family name, but you know, these things happen. These things happen. Well,
didn't you have a great aunt, or a great aunt Fungus Face?
Yes, yes. That's not what we called her, tour face, but she had a mean left hook as well.
Well, isn't the tradition to name the child after the first thing that you see after they're born? Maybe.
I don't even want to go anywhere near there, Hannah. Thank you so much.
You've obviously never been in the delivery room.
We're just going to stop that whole line of thinking right there. This week, poll is about our favorite topic, sound bites. And the question is, what's your favorite part of sound bites? You know, we do a whole bunch of things on this show. Which one do you like the best? The choices are the banter, that is to say the chit-chat amongst us, some of which we are doing right now, or the calls, or our guests, or the news, or the poll, or the reviews, or the late-lamented trivia. And so you get to vote on those particular things. Currently, we have 92 votes. Calls is leading with 42% of the votes, followed by news with 34% of the votes. Banter is only 12%. So far, so clearly you don't like to hear us talk. Well, you know
what?
Well,
that's not the most important thing they like.
No, you're right. It's not their favorite part.
Yeah.
However, the poll only got 2 votes, so clearly the poll is not the big thing for us. But we'd like you to vote in the poll, and once you're done with that, below that you'll see a yellow box, and if you click in that link, you can leave an opinion. You can go over to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com,
and leave your opinions. So far, we have 23 opinions, some of which are actually humorous and interesting. Let me just say, no, you shouldn't go over to Building 12 and kick the server. The server's working. I just don't know why I can't. I just have not had the time to sit down at the server and figure out why I can't stream. I don't know. Some people seem to think the reason the show cam is not on is because we're all naked. We tried that. Hannah made us put our clothes back on, though. I'm afraid that she was adamant about that. Apparently there's some sort of rules now, some sort of decency rules that we have to follow.
We don't have enough paper over the window.
We don't have any paper over the window, which trust me, would have been a good idea. So please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Once you've done that, of course, and once you've entered your opinion at asknick.com, head back over to Soundbites and check out some of the very cool things that are going on. My favorite personal part of the website itself is the forums. We have some truly tremendous people on the forums. They are about as crazy as the day is long, and they're wonderful. And they have all kinds of, not only can you get answers to your computer questions, but they will talk about just dang near anything on earth. And many of them, their views are wonderfully and wildly skewed. You can also take a look at, you may have noticed our logo seems to be naked falcons. It's the falcons that are naked, not us.
But the URL doesn't work.
What URL?
Under the picture.
Falconbites.org. But it is bites with a Y, as Falcon would like us to remind you. so you can read about what the logos are about and look at the movie posters. We have some of the most talented and funny people on the web on our sites, and we're very delighted to have them. So please do that. Before we get back to the phones, let me remind you that next week, the 19th, we will be on at our regular time since the Yankees don't start until 3:15. So we'll be on at our regular time. We're very excited to say that. And one last thing. I want to talk about a book that I just got recently. It's called How Linux Works, What Every Super User Should Know. It's from No Starch Press, which I find highly amusing, by a guy named Brian Ward. This is not really a beginner's book. This won't teach you how to install, you know, how to run Linux if you just got it. But if you've been running it for a little bit of time, or you're just interested in how it works underneath, what happens during the boot process, how to change things, how to add things to the initialization sequence. This is very clear, very cleanly written, very well written. It tells you what all those directories are all about, what the user directory is for, and the var directory, and the temp directory, and sbin, and bin, and all that other stuff. There's all kinds of stuff about that. There's all about various file systems and how to configure your network, what network services are and how they work, a little bit about writing shell scripts, development tools, a little bit about that, how to compile your software from source code, you know, in case you run on that and you find something interesting and you want to run it, but there isn't a package for your system. There is a section on maintaining the kernel. My personal suggestion is skip that. My good friend Tony Placilla is always telling me that recompiling the kernel is easy and simple, and that I'm not a real Linux guru until I've done it.
Recompiling it correctly.
That's the hard part, yeah. But this tells you about how to do it, and it's pretty interesting. Peripheral devices, which might seem to be some sort of voodoo in Linux, are actually quite simple once you've read this explanation. Brian Ward has done a terrific job in telling us how to do that. Printing, all about how to set up your printer. A little bit about backups, which is nice, using Samba to connect to Windows Shares, doing all kinds of stuff. It's a great book. You should pick it up. It's called How Linux Works, What Every Super User Should Know. And it, like I said, it's not for somebody who doesn't have Linux or who hasn't run it. But if you've been running it for a little while and are beginning to wonder about the internals and how to do some very cool things with very little work or effort, just knowing which command does what, this is the book for you. It's a great book, How Linux Works, What Every Super User Should Know, by Brian Ward. I just felt the necessity to talk about that because it captured me. I was captured this week. Put my book down before I hurt you.
I'm having a problem this week. I'm trying to figure a way to turn off the auto detect for the monitor and manually set a specific resolution.
There you go. So how to do that is in there.
It keeps auto detecting wrong because it's an old monitor.
Oh yeah. Well, that'll help you. It's a very good book, How Linux Works. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Mitch from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mitch. What's your question? Mitch,
Hello.
Are you there? Are you asleep? Did we put you to sleep or what?
Hello.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Vince. It's not Mitch. My apologies, guys.
Vince.
Hannah must have not heard me.
No,
listen, just a couple of things. One thing is that all together, everything together on your show makes it a great show. It's not anything individually. Nothing in and of itself makes it a great show, but put it all together and it's great.
Thank you very much, Vince.
Just a question. Now, I have to be out of the office constantly. I sell real estate. I have to be out of the office constantly, and I need some sort of a wireless system, either with the cellular or with some of the hotspots where the Wi-Fi is. Now, when I looked at a Sony Vaio V505 series,
yeah.
Nice little real lightweight, 4 pound, about 4 pounds. Is that something that's good? And what kind of card should I use with the cellular? Do you have any answers for me in that?
What
I need to, What I need to access is like pictures, email, a listing, so forth and so on, those types of things.
Sure. There are the Sony Vaio product in and of itself is a very nice one. And heaven knows it's lightweight and very easy to carry around and a decent screen. It's pretty nifty. In terms of wireless, you're right, there are two ways you can go. Wi-Fi, which is the hotspot stuff, or cellular.
And cellular, the real big thing is what kind of phone you have. If it can connect to your computer and be a cellular modem connected to the serial port, for example, or the USB port, or the latest thing now is Bluetooth wireless in the computer and the modem, so the computer can use the cell phone as a modem.
Right, and if you use Bluetooth, if your machine has Bluetooth or a Bluetooth card, and your phone has Bluetooth built in, they don't even have to be physically connected. They just have to be near each other.
Uh-huh. Or how about the other part? If I went and got a cell line for the PCMCIA card that slides in, and that's actually a phone itself?
That would also work. Same idea. The other choice is...
The problem there with using cell phones is the metered minute charge that
right,
most companies have.
Right, it depends on your charge.
They have some unlimited plans. I checked on that. They have some unlimited plans. I think about $80 a month for a totally unlimited number of minutes.
Now, the difference is this. Wi-Fi, you're going to have to find a spot.
Uh-huh.
It's not ubiquitous yet. Uh-huh. Cell phones, you can pick up anywhere except where you really need to make a call, like in an elevator or under a bridge. But you can pretty much get it anywhere. The problem is it's going to be much slower.
Okay.
So that's kind of
Wi-Fi
an interesting trade-off.
Wi-Fi is going to be much slower, or the...
No, cellular is going to be slower.
Cellular runs about 2,400 baud, 4,800 baud if you're lucky. The Wi-Fi is up to 54 megabits in the speed of your internet connection at the other end.
Even if
usually.
It's 3 megabits, you're
right.
Still way, way ahead of...
The last option that makes sense for some people, especially if they have larger vehicles, is satellite internet. You can get a small 12 to 18 inch dish on your vehicle and then have satellite internet pretty much anywhere. I know several people that have done that on their RVs, which is probably about the size of the vehicle you want to have an 18 inch dish on the roof.
Right.
But is that an expensive option there with the,
that's about $100 a month. But for people in outlying areas that can't get high speed, and this is high speed internet. If you're outside the range of Roadrunner or DSL, then satellite's about your only choice.
Okay.
But the mobility of it makes it nice too.
But what you might want to do is talk to some of your friends who have regular modems connecting to the internet.
Okay.
And connect to them at a low speed. Make sure, watch the speed that you're doing things at, and download a couple of those pictures you want to download and see how long it takes.
Okay.
That'll help you decide whether or not cellular will do what you want it to
and
do.
And then ask your cell phone company what phone and what
they
connections
have,
they offer.
About the broadband. They have the broadband. Verizon is offering broadband. I don't know if it's available everywhere.
I don't know if it's available on a phone.
Okay. Yeah, they do have it. Verizon does have it, wireless broadband. So
I'm going to look that up.
No, they have,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, guys. I won't take up any more of your time.
Thank you very much. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Hannah Jacobs, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When the news shows up on your doorstep, it's...
Thousand watts. I wonder how many gigabytes that would translate to. Welcome back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
Steve is off doing, I don't know what he's doing. Chet is paying attention. He's actually listening to the show. Chet, you're such a geek. I mean, that's great. He is, and he knows he is, too. We're back, and we're going to talk next. Thank you, Steve. Steve was out wandering the corridors for no discernible reason, possibly testing the limits of his ankle bracelet. We're back, and it's John from SOTUS, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. I've got a question on my Norton antivirus updates.
Uh-huh.
When I put them through to create the updates like they came through today, for a long time it says, couldn't create callback object. For a while it had a SimTech reboot or redirect on it, but then it comes in with this, and I'm wondering whether the antivirus and the definitions and all that stuff gets updated for sure, or whether there's a problem there.
Sounds like there's a problem.
Yeah, sounds like it to me. Have you run this? Have you danced the security tango?
What's that?
Have you danced the security tango? Here's the deal. We have a site out there called securitytango.org. Securitytango.com.
Securitytango.com.
Yep.
Dot what?
Com.
Com.
And
okay.
if you go to the Security Tango,
yeah,
and dance it, basically, what happens is this. The first thing you'll see is a little bit about what the Security Tango is and all of that, and then you'll see a Let's Dance button on the left.
Let's dance? Okay.
And it takes you step by step, for Windows users only at this point.
Right.
Step by step down through running a product called Stinger. There are links to all these things as well.
Yeah.
Stinger, then your antivirus, then Adaware, then SpyBot, then a couple of other things.
Yeah.
In order to clean, and you need to, as with any good tango, you need to dance each step in order and don't skip any.
Uh-huh.
And that should clear out your machine and keep everything clean and fresh.
Clean and fresh, okay. Yeah, I got Windows 98 with the, but nobody's been able to get a hold of Norton very well to ask them themselves, you know, on their website. It didn't work out too well.
See, yeah. a lot of the newer viruses,
yeah,
will actually disable your antivirus software. It looks like it's still running, or you get a wacky error message like that one, and
uh-huh.
But it looks like it's still working, and in fact, it's not. The Stinger program specifically is designed to catch those particular viruses and disable them. Then you reinstall your... Well, you'll read about it on the Tango page.
Okay. Well, that helps me out because I haven't been able to find out from anybody else what to do for that.
That's where I'd start.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And, of course, Security Tango is... Yet another service of the Ask Nick Empire.
That's the Ask Nick Empire.
Our next caller is Alex from Fairport. Welcome, Alex. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I run Mozilla and Outlook Express for mail.
Yeah.
And in the last few weeks, I've had problems with trying to click on hyperlinks in my mail. It doesn't really connect to anything.
Okay, you're running Mozilla and what?
And Outlook Express.
Okay.
And, like, I'm on a page about a free coupon from a bookstore that starts with the letter B.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them.
And I click on click here and nothing happens. Or I'll get a Microsoft Internet Explorer screen that's blank.
Well, that's interesting because you clicked on, you said you're running Mozilla.
Well, sometimes Mozilla, sometimes I go out of Express for the mail. I do both.
Okay. When, okay, does this happen on every site?
Just about anything that I have email for. I mean, the regular internet is fine. I can go from hyperlink to a new page. And
okay, so what you're really talking about is in Outlook Express,
right?
Hyperlinks don't work.
Yeah.
This is a common question. I wonder if it's already on our FAQ. Let me look it up, too.
Yeah.
Is it something under the internet security levels or if it's under tools or...
Yeah, here's what you need to do. You need to... what's happened is somehow that the hyperlinks have... association has been broken.
Okay.
And what you need to do is on my computer...
Right.
Actually, in pretty much any window, under the View menu, you have folder options and file types.
Okay.
Or you can go to Control Panel and pick Folder Options.
Okay.
Scroll down that list until you see URL Hypertext Transfer Protocols. Listen, this is silly. We're going to put this. We're going to put the answer on the website. Go to
Sounds
our
good.
Website, soundbites.org.
I got it bookmarked. Good.
There you go. And that's Bites with a Y, of course. Francis needs us to remind you.
Thanks,
Francis
guys.
Farley. And then you need to go to, I heard a website on your show, ..
I think it's Brodo.
At the next break, we'll put that link up so that you can figure out how to get there.
Sounds great.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. It's pages long, and it's asinine to try to go through it now when he can actually see pictures and all kinds of cute stuff on the website. Our next caller is Nick from Penyan, New York. Welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, doing great here. Just had a drama show fundraiser for Penyan and it's a chicken dinner here. So
cool.
We're having fun. And I have a question, number one, about an old Dell laptop Inspiron 7000 and an S-Video connector that I have there. I haven't been able to get it to actually do anything hooking it up with an S-Video cable to an S-Video plug in the back of a TV. Any hints on how I would actually enable that?
Yeah, you have to turn the S-Video on in the BIOS.
In the BIOS?
Yeah. I forget, I have an Inspiron 7000, and I have an S-Video cable. And, in fact, you do have to turn it on somewhere in the BIOS, but I can't offhand remember where that is.
Isn't there also the F5 key there that switches between
internal screen? That won't work unless the S-Video is turned on.
Right, internal screen, external screen, or both.
Right, or
right,
S-Video,
I've played with that.
It's turned on in the BIOS.
Yeah.
If it's not turned on, it skips it.
Lovely.
Okay.
So it's somewhere in the BIOS, and I apologize that I can't begin to remember where.
No, that's okay. That gives me a good hint of where to go there.
Yeah. That...
One other quick question, though. I know there used to be some sort of site frame grabber that was in the, heard of website on your show. I wasn't able to seem to find it, though. You used to have something where you could capture websites it was a low-cost program, something like, 15 or 20 bucks.
To capture other
anything?
Websites?
It used to be, to capture other websites. Say if there's a picture or whatever on somebody else's website, you'd be able to...
Right-click on it and choose Save As.
No, you want the whole website, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
You want to be able to download a website to, like, a CD-ROM or something.
Yeah, PageSuckers do it. Internet Explorer has that built in on the Mac.
Yeah, I don't think it does anywhere else. But there's a bunch of them. One is called HTTTrack.
HTTTrack?
Right. That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. WebTrucker used to be one, but I think they're out of business these days.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to look for SiteSucker. You said we used to have one on our link list?
Yeah, but I haven't been able... I was looking for it and wasn't able to find it there.
Yeah. That I don't know, but yeah, if it's I don't see it either. You're right, but I know HTTTrack. If you go to Google and do a search for website download or site sucker or site retriever, that sort of thing.
Okay.
That you'll be able to get there. I apologize.
No, yeah, that's
right.
That's
I don't
okay.
See it on our list anywhere.
No, that's helpful.
Okie doke.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very
Enjoy.
Much. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back. I promise you this, with Steve Ray, the magnificent Hannah Jacobs, and me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's the biggest event to hit Rochester in years. The Fast Ferry is HAM. This is Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM. From PCs to Macs, these guys can help with any computer question you may have. So call the boys now at 222-1180, the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And this is Soundbites. I want to apologize. We didn't get that link up.
It's up now.
It's up now. There you go. Steve got it up. We were chatting with Hannah, and that clearly took precedence. Oh, there seems to be a certain placidity to my microphone. Okay. We're back, and we're going to talk to Joe.
You weren't listening to that commercial that just ran, were
from
you?
From Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Well, I have a question, but first I'd like to address one of the guy that just called in. I would say use WGET. That's something from the GNU project, and there are versions available for Win32 if he needs it.
Right, and I use WGET all the time, but it won't get a whole website all in one swoop.
Well, it has the recursive option.
Well, that's
do.
True. That's true, it does. You're absolutely right. There's a product called WGET, W-G-E-T, which has been available on Unix and Linux-based systems for since 1960. And
I did a quick Google search for it, and it seems to be available for Win32 if he needs it.
Right. All the GNU tools are available under Win32 as well. And, in fact, I use WGET all the time. Often enough, when I go to download something from a website and the website is busy, I'll do WGET and then paste the link in, and it'll retry 100 times before it gives up. And so there's a better chance of getting it than constantly clicking on the stinking website.
So my question is, for my mom, kind of has to run under Win32, Windows 2000.
I think you're underestimating your mother, but go ahead.
Well, has card game on a CD that will only run under Windows. But anyway, I want her to run game. But the problem is she's still on dial-up. And, of course, game doesn't do the neat, nifty thing of waiting for the dial-up connection to complete before it tries to log on. I was wondering if there's anything you know of that some little tool I can use to wait for a dial-up connection to actually succeed and then run a program. Because me being a Linux guy, of course, I'm thinking like IP up.
Well, exactly.
Or tell her to click on the dial-up icon and wait.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, you double-click on a dial-up icon, it dials up the remote computer, that's fine. But to get her to actually go, have to remember to go over and, I want to start my instant messenger, too. Because the native AOL client does that just fine, and I'm, kind of envious of that. But I got tired of the stuff like Wild Tangent and that being installed.
Have you thought about creating a bash file?
Ooh, I could call the dial-up networking from a batch file.
Uh-huh. Call dial-up networking from a batch file. Once it logs in, run game. So she has to just remember to double-click on one thing. Get me to game. Game, for those of you who are wondering, is not game as in I got game. It's game as in G-A-I-M, which originally stood for the GNOME AOL Instant Messenger. But now it's a multi-function thing. It talks. It's a Jabber client. Jabber is a separate protocol. It talks to Jabber, AOL Instant Messenger, Yahoo Instant Messenger, ICQ. Who else? A couple
MSN.
Others. MSN.
Gadu.
Right. Gadu. And it talks to all of these other things at once. So instead of having 5 or 6 clients sitting on your desktop talking to people and getting in each other's way and eventually taking up all your resources and killing your computer, you can just run game and do it all.
I haven't seen it much, but I guess Trillian does much the same thing.
Trillian, I have to say, in public, I have a bone to pick with Trillian.
What's that?
For some reason, and I worked, the folks at Trillian were wonderful working with me on this to fix it. For some reason, every single day for 2.5 months, I got an email message from the folks at Trillian telling me I should sign up because it was the greatest thing on earth.
Oh, boy.
And they admitted it was theirs. They said they had stopped the promotion. Why was I still getting email? Nobody knew. Then I decided in that moment that if they couldn't even stop sending me email, I was never going to run Trillian. Now, I know millions of people run it and have no trouble with it and think it's a great program. I have a personal prejudice against it, which should not in any way have anything to do with you. There are a bunch of them, in fact. If you go to jabber.org and look at the clients, you'll find clients for every operating system and multiple ones for every operating system. So you aren't even stuck with game if you don't want to use it.
Yeah, Jabber... kind of nice, too. They have gateways to other instant messaging networks, too.
Well, that's just it. Actually, at RIT, we set up a game Jabber network, and from that one, I can log on to every instant messaging client on Earth and talk to multiple, because, for the students that I teach, I don't want to have to dictate, you must be on this. So I can talk to all of them. They have no excuse for not getting hold of me anymore.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the suggestion, guys.
Thank you very much, bye, Joe. Man. Good luck. Helping his mom. He's a good son, a devoted youth, and we like to see that. Our next caller is Marianne from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question? Marianne?
Marianne hung up on us.
Lost her.
Oh, Marianne. Okay, we're going to go to Bruce.
Bruce, also in Rochester, New York. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yes, he is. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, thank you. Just a quick question. Is there anything in the works or, you know, coming down the road to get you guys back on some primetime television?
Well, that's
I was
sort of.
I was crushed when you were not on Fridays anymore.
Thank you. We are still on, kind of. We're on Rochester On Demand. So you have
digital cable.
Yeah, you have digital cable.
Channel 111.
111.
111 okay. For everyone else, yeah.
Right. Channel 111, and we're there regularly. But not anything on local television. So if you know somebody at one of the national networks, you need to call them up immediately and harass them to get us on the air.
Okay, will do.
Okay.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, that was very nice of him to ask. That's a very sweet thing. Our next, hold on, I can't type and talk at the same time. Our next caller is Phil from Irondequoit, New York.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Phil, how are you?
Great. I got a weird situation. I installed a new printer, and it seemed to take out my sound device.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not that weird.
Some of the printers have audio feedback. Your paper is out.
Right.
Paper jam. And it likes to load these audio drivers in and can mess up the audio you've already got.
And it's also possible that, what, is it a USB?
Yeah, actually.
And did you have to activate USB in order to plug it in?
No, it was the same, printer port that my old printer was on and just literally plugged it right in and threw the disk in the drive and followed the install and directions. But ever since then, no sound. And when I check all the, the control panel stuff for the sound devices and all that, there is no sound device.
There are two things you can do. One is to change the IRQ of one of the devices, the sound device or the printer. Or
how does one do that?
Not easily under Windows.
Okay.
But the easier thing to do, particularly if you don't care if the thing says paper jam.
No, I don't. Not even a little.
The other thing to do is to go into, what are you running?
XP.
XP. All right. We can do that. What you want to do is right-click on my computer and select properties.
Right.
From there, click on the hardware tab.
Right.
Then run device manager.
Okay. Been there, okay.
Okay, once you're there, go down to sound, video, and game controllers.
Yeah.
Find your video card.
But the problem is that there's all these things, and they all say they're working fine.
That's okay.
Okay.
Find your video card, your audio card.
Right.
And delete it. Before you do this, however, make sure you have the CD that came with your machine that has the driver for that video, for that audio card.
So would that be like the original install, the Windows backup if the thing crashes?
Maybe not. See if there's one specifically for the audio card. If not, then you're going to want to go to the website of the manufacturer of either your machine or the audio card and download the latest driver.
Okay.
Put that somewhere on your hard disk. Once you've got that there, then delete the card, reboot. It'll find the card again and say, I have this card.
What do you want me to do with this? Right.
We want to add add the driver, and that should overwrite the files that the printer put on.
Okay.
If that makes sense to you.
Yeah, actually.
You may want to uninstall the printer first.
Well, right.
I reinstall the printer, isn't that going to do the same thing again?
Well, it might not. You might get a choice that you didn't notice the first time to install only the printer drivers or the whole Magilla.
Custom install, even.
Right, you might be able to go into a custom install and uncheck sound and blah, blah, blah. But try this first. It ought to work.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Gentlemen. Who came in? Thank you. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Hannah Jacobs, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve is here every Saturday from 12:20 till 2 to answer any and all computer and computer-related questions. Now, back to Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Hannah Jacobs.
and you were listening to the mighty, mighty Chet Walker. And this is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. And we're talking to Carolyn from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Carolyn. What's your question?
Thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you for calling.
I'm running Windows 98 SE. I have 256 meg of RAM. And we recently changed our system.ini file to
How much RAM?
256.
Okay.
We read someplace that we should add this line to our system.ini file. Conservative swap file usage equals 1.
Okay.
And, well, anyway, what's happening is I spend a lot of time on the Internet, and I find that my memory is getting used up, and I end up having to reboot, you know, fairly frequently.
Well, yeah.
And I'm just wondering what's going on, because our antivirus is up to date, and we run the security Tango really frequently.
What's going on is this. Normally, the swap file, what happens is this. As you start filling up memory, the system takes the least used thing you're doing, and it does it usually by time or by how often you've used it, and swaps that out to the hard drive.
Yep.
If you say you want conservative swap file use, it does that less often, and memory fills up.
Okay.
Faster.
Okay.
Now, there's nothing that's going to stop memory from filling up in Windows 98. Just ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, in fact, you're actually exacerbating the problem, or making it worse, by turning on conservative swap file use.
Okay, see. All right, we read someplace that seemed to be indicating the opposite.
No. It sounds like it would be the opposite, but in fact, what it means is don't use the swap file often.
Okay.
If you have a real lot of RAM.
Which it does, 256 meg. But the other part of the problem is Windows 98 actually has trouble using more than 128 meg.
Okay. All right.
So particularly if you tell it to be conservative with the swap file, your best bet in terms of Windows 98 is to actually make a bigger swap. Of course, if you're letting it happen dynamically, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm job hunting.
Uh-huh.
So I have a lot of those, you know, like Monster.com and Yahoo Jobs and all these things sending me emails with jobs.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly in my email and then clicking on all these links to go to look at different jobs. Now, do you think that's causing me a problem doing something like that?
Generally speaking, you don't run out of RAM. You run out of heap space. Heap space, H-E-A-P.
Mm-hmm.
And heap space is a special little area of memory, which in Windows 98 is 64K, which keeps track of all your open programs, all your desktop icons, everything running in the system tray, that sort of fare. If you've got a big picture in the background, if you've got lots of icons on your desktop, if you've got lots of things running in the system tray, which is the lower right corner there down by the clock.
Mm-hmm.
If you launch and quit the same programs over and over again.
Multiple times.
Okay.
Those are the things that tend to fill up the heap space.
Okay.
And generally when you run low on resources or run out of memory, it's not memory, it's the heap space.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in Windows 98, you can't change the size of, and well, in fact, no version of Windows can you change the size of the heap space.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be better at, for example, if you've got 25 or 30 or 40, or in some cases, I've seen people with like hundreds of icons, on their desktop, don't do that.
We don't have too many, no. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah. If you need to have, you know, a dozen or so on your desktop, put them in folders. And then they're only using memory when you open that folder.
Yes.
So that will help.
Understand.
Again, stuff in the system tray, big pictures in the background. And as Steve said, the big one is opening and closing files over and over and over again. Open and closing programs, rather. So if, for example, you keep closing your browser in between changing your emails and opening a new browser window every time, that's going to make you run out of memory.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I have been doing that.
There you go. Try not doing it.
Yeah, launch the program and leave it open.
First, get rid of conservative swap file usage.
Okay.
Just for now. You can put it back later if you feel you really want it.
Surely.
But try getting rid of it, see if that helps solve the problem, and do what we said about leaving the browser open.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means.
Keep going.
Keep going. Our next caller is Richard from Victor. Welcome, Richard. What's your question?
Hi. I was listening to your program a week or so ago, and you were talking to a gentleman about Tango and Stinger and Adware and Spybot.
Yes, sure.
And I was curious as to what it is and where do I find it.
Oh, it's simple. We talk a lot about how to get rid of spyware on this show.
Right.
And one day, I don't know how it happened, I started referring to it as the security tango, dancing the security tango.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a joke for a while. But then I thought, you know what? We really need a website. So you can go to securitytango.com. And that will tell you about the tango, lead you through all the steps of the tango.
I tried that.
Uh-huh.
And I got nothing.
SecurityTango.com?
Yeah.
It's up right now. I'm on it.
Who are you?
There's no space between security and tango.
No?
No.
How do you spell tango?
T-A-N-G-O.
That's what I did.
T-A-N-G-O. I'm sorry, but I'm there right now. SecurityTango.com. I apologize. We have to go. It really is up. I'm looking at it even as we speak. I want to thank Steve Ray and Hannah Jacobs. We'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20 on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.